jump all over it like I'm doing, but
that's just fine. That's
but
what
I trusted him during an episode. Typhoon, when I had to do some nasty work, he's the only one I would trust. But the executive officer told me I'd had enough of the war. He screwed me up to begin with, because I had a deck division. I was the meanest SOB you could ever see, but one of the fairest and one of the nicest. If that can act into one way or another. But I had a division. And I had 48 men. Among that, in that division, I had two ordained ministers. I had men that were let out of prison early. There was a prize fighter and his manager. And then of course there was some nice 17 and 18 year olds that could learn seamanship and would be interested in it. But it's kind of a motley crew. But I had to try and straighten this thing out and get them toeing the mark. I couldn't do it regulation manner. I had to do it in my own way, in my own time, in my own thing. They were coming along real good. And the thing that was, I ran it two-fisted operation. And the admiral came up one night and said, "Well, your liberty call has sounded." He said, "Why aren't these men going ashore?" So I told him why they weren't going ashore. I said, "Are you giving me a direct order?" He said, "No." And then I told him why they weren't going ashore. Wouldn't go ashore until I was damn good and ready to let him go ashore. And so I told him, and he seemed to have no problem with it. Didn't say anything, "That's a nice job," or anything like that, because he knew damn well I was busting all regulation. But I learned not to do regulation. Tonight I became a bastard in the Navy. On December 1st, 1942. Anyway, I feel like I'm getting off of everything now, but the admiral started to leave then, and I said, "If you've got a minute, admiral, I want to talk to you." So I went down out of earshot from the man who worked chip and chain, and said, "No." Told him, I said, "Now, if these men all come in and do it, good day's job, and turn to at 8 o'clock, and you get a good job out of them, I'd like you to let me have those that qualify 1,400 hours of liver time at 2 o'clock. I said, "Can you arrange that?" Well, I was a mistake for me to have to. The next day, about 11 o'clock, my division officer said, "It's okay, if you want to turn men on liberty at 1,400 hours, you can do so." The damn detective of my spoke. And I gave him 1,400 hours liberty, but a day or two after that, the exec called me to his cabin and says, "I'm transferring." I have a mastered arms force that is not functioning the way it should, and I want to put you in that, and I want you to make that thing so it's functional. but I don't want you to step on any toes. And I said, I don't want to go in the Master Iron Works. I'm not a cop. I'm a sailor. A deck. He said, I don't care. I said, would you get me out of it when it's functional? Yeah. He'd release me from it. I ran the Master's Armed Force. I didn't run it. There were two chiefs. I was only a first class petty officer. And there were other petty officers. And I saw right away what the problem was. I knew immediately. So I had to figure out how to correct it. So I went about doing my duty as a Master's Armed should do. And they could observe me. Rather than to teach them drag. And then one of them came to me one day, shortly after I was doing my job, and says, how do you know what to do? I said, it's in the ship's organization. Get the ship's organization and read it. Every duty you have is in that organization, and abide by it. Then they started straightening out. The Master's Armed Force, they had technical rates. They didn't have man working rates. They didn't have to work with the men. They didn't have to detail the men. They had technical rates, which doesn't really make a Master's Arms out of a Shinola bag. And the head chief was a cop, retired in the Philadelphia Police Force, who didn't know a damn thing about Navy stuff, how to handle it. And the other chief was a pipsqueak who got his nose down every time an officer stopped, and he was following. That's just the way I put it, too. And pretty soon, this little pipsqueak of a chief come in one morning and started waking me up. He got mad at me the day before, and he was about half snooted from going ashore at Pearl. Came in and woke me up and said, you got to get the mess attendants up. And I said, what time is it? And he told me. And I reached under my pillow and grabbed my shoe and threw it at him. And I missed. And he put me on report. So, here I am, a Master at Arms on report. That's unheard of. So, my name was first on the list. They had about 100 names on the list to report to the executive office mass. And so I stood in front of the line. And when the exec got to his desk, the chief went in and talked to him and says, I'm in front of the line. He said, so he came out and told me, he said, well, he'll see you after the last version. So I went to the tail of the line and stood. And then they went back again to a conference with the exec, and Keith came back to me and says, he'll try you in his cabin and we'll pass the word for him. So I took off. Not a story, it's a fact.
I mean, that's quite...
That's the type of sailor I was. I didn't believe in regulation by then, because I found out to get things done, you got to do it your own way, if you've got a way. And I was taught by the very best man the Navy ever had on seamanship.
Did you keep a diary?
I don't need a diary. It's a couple or something. But I did those writings, but see, they're so incomplete, because there's things I have to leave out of it. Well, we get back to this damn thing about the master arm, then I'll tell you about something. Anyway, they call for me. And the exec, I was his boy, I was his troubleshooter. I didn't like the SOB. Again, the name of Keith. And, but he never gave me a bad order. So I never accepted a bad order. I never refused a good order. And sometimes a good order is an order I don't like, but I never refused a good order. But I never accepted in my life a bad order. So, and they keep promoting me. But I don't want to be promoted anymore. I'm tired. I want to go. I want to be in contact with the men, personal contact. Anyway, he said, "What's your complaint, Eric?" And I said, "Well, if you will agree, the ship's organization, page so-and-so, chapter so-and-so, you will find that the mastered arms do not have to be arose an hour and a half before revel, before it's time to wake up the mess books." I was awakened an hour and a half earlier than I should have been. And I said, "That's just plain spite. And I'm just sorry about one thing. I threw a shoe at him when I missed him. I'm sorry I didn't hit him." The exec says, "Case dismissed." Got away with it. So I started out. Chief started out. He said, "Just one moment, Chief. I want to talk to you." So what he said, I don't know, but I think he chewed him out pretty good.
You had a mind of your own, right?
I learned that from an executive officer whom I love very much, John Crenshaw. And I met him later, and I told him he was running a rotten outfit. He was a captain then, too. But I speak my piece. And I get what I want, as a rule. Just gotten through. I just gotten through some specialized commando type training at ATB Oceanside, and from Camp Pendleton, where I got into some problems with the drill sergeant. But on the BJ day, we were boarding the train, my outfit. They started out training. This outfit started out with about a little over 100 men, and we trained down to 48 men. We weeded out those. There were two other first-class bosun mates, but they somehow got weeded out. I didn't think I had a chance to get weeded out, but they kept me. That awful. So anyway, it didn't bother me. But we were waiting for the train. The train was late. About six of us guys went up into town at Oceanside, California, and there's a madam with two of her girls drove up in the car alongside us, and we were walking. I stuck my head in and I said, "Have you got a drink for us? Because the bar's all cold." And then she took out a bottle and passed it around. By the time we got it passed around, that fifth was gone. And then I said, "Have you got some wash?" So she had two ponies of beer, which we had a little drink. So, yeah, I remember when the war was over what happened.
I bet you did.
So, Anyway, we told them where we were and how many men we had and where we were going to Frisco. And she said, so when we got back to the depot, they were there and they had brought a case of moose. So anyway,
there
was a party because they went and got a couple more cases. By the time they got the second case, they were orange colored crap and pink stuff. And no wonder some of them got sick.
Right. Did you feel that? How did you feel about how the war ended?
My life. Because I was on a suicide mission, really. A train flight. Get the hell out of the Navy was my expectation. I had enough. I didn't want to be in peacetime Navy. I didn't want to go by rules and regulations.
Anymore.
Because I had a free reign. I mean, that was ungodly. Unbelievable. And I had so much knowledge and seamanship that I was transferred to me.
What was your trip home like?
And my friend got a trip home too with me because he was in his 40s and he was that man. He was a good man. But, geez. I didn't want friends. I didn't need them any longer, so I chewed his grommet up and down. And we never spoke again. I regret that. But that's the way I was. I'm a damaged carrier on that one. I'm a damaged carrier.
Did you go directly home? Directly home?
Oh, I was damaged. I'd suffered a very severe concussion. And I looked like hell. And that's one of the reasons I got transferred, is my appearance just wasn't good. Because I'd taken a severe concussion. And, I think I got 2 or 3 weeks in Miles City ice camp. And then I went to report to duty at Shoemaker, California. And I got the shoemaker and they started examining me. And they threw my ass in the hospital for observation to see if I was fit for service. I convinced them I was. That's when I was transferred down to Oceanside. Second thing I did was take off my shoes. If that'll answer your question.
Okay. How did people at home react when you got there? Do you remember that?
I didn't make any big splash on anything. I don't think anybody... I had to register for the draft. I was summoned, registered for the draft. Yeah, and I hated to do things like that. But it's the way we work. So I did.
Had your community changed much when you got back?
Did what?
Had your community changed much when you got back? Did things look different?
It was me, not the community. Was me. I changed. I had to acclimate myself as a gentleman. And I just had a tough time. And through the help of my wife, pushed me around her baby finger. And she did. When I got out of line, saying the wrong things, which I always do, I'd get kicked in the shins.
When in there did you get married?
We got married while I was traveling under orders from Dago to Brooklyn, New York. and she was in Los Angeles. So I looked her up and proposed, and she said yes, like a damn fool, and married me. And why she stayed with me, I'll never know.
She loved you.
I never leveled with her. And at wartime activities, I'd go to bed when I first get in, I'd wake up, and I'd hit her or something in my sleep. That's the way it is.
A lot of adjustments when you got back, right?
Oh, yeah.
Do you remember some of the hardest ones or the easiest ones?
Trying to become a civilian again. Trying to become a worthwhile citizen. That was hard.
Now you said you're a junior.
I had job after job. And I was too damn tough for most of them. Because I wouldn't take no crap from anybody.
So were you in business for yourself as a junior?
No. I was eventually. After I matured enough and learned the trade. And I enjoyed it very much because I had some difficulties. I had some injuries and stuff like that I sustained. And, incidentally, well, it's just something that I wouldn't want. What is they had these purple hearts. And I don't think the purple hearts is anything but good. And it's well set. However, there are individuals that take advantage of a purple heart. I don't think they deserved them, some of them. And now they're playing it up big. They put people's names up at the courthouse and all that stuff. Some of them weren't entitled to it, I don't believe. But the whole thing, the whole idea of purple heart, there's not a thing wrong with that. But I think they should have very tougher laws on who gets them and who doesn't. For instance, the reason I would never accept one, was like we get into battle. And some people, when they say abandon ship, some people burn their hands sliding down the line. They're in such a big hurry to get away. They could get a purple heart for that. I don't think that's right. That's where I'm saying it's abuse. We had a man running for president this last time. 3 purple hearts and you leave the battle zone. You got 3 purple hearts in, I don't know, 2-3 months. Is that right? I don't think so. There's a lot of guys that were seriously hurt.
Did you receive it?
In the Navy?
Well, I
right now, I'm a disabled veteran from the Veterans Administration. You bet. They take very good care of me. And I did not apply for any Veterans Administration compensation. Except I supplied the discharge, but I never pursued it. I found I could make a living by working hard once I got into something I wanted to do. But then, in the late 70s or early 80s, around 79, 78, 79, 80, 81, I started having reoccurrence of some of the injuries I'd suffered. And I applied for disability. And And then I found out how bad a bastard I was because my health records were destroyed, 4 years of them, on December 1st, 1942. Then I have to be a bastard once I have nothing to go on. But the Veterans Administration has their tight bunch, but they're pretty honest in many ways too. And I had vertigo, and that's what really screwed me up in my work and everything else. And it reoccurred pretty severely around 1980. So I applied for disability, and I was granted, I think, 20%. Then I was good for quite a while, and then they granted me 60% disability. I got so mad at the VA one day when they told me that my ear, it was discovered in about 2001 that my eardrum was perforated, and it's been perforated all along. They couldn't see it because of it never heals. And it was discovered that, and so I wanted that on my record. And they came back with the statement that a doctor told them that it had been just recently perforated. And that made me so mad, because I've taken a shower, I never got my ear wet, I never go swimming, I gave up swimming. I was once a lifeguard before I went in. I was qualified in Minneapolis to be a lifeguard, but I never used it. I went in the service about that time. So I was certified. And that made me so mad. And I wanted to know how I could really burn her ass. Not asking for any bennies or anything, but just to burn her ass. And I went in and I need some expertise help. If I want to do this job so that they'll hurt him, so that they'll. So I went to the state. Talked to me and she said, I'm busy. She had people all over waiting on appointments, and I just walked in and sat down one in a room, and she came in and talked to me right away. And the others waited while she all I want to do is chew them out in a proper manner. So she took the bull by the horns, had me sign something, and she went ahead and had a complaint for me. I didn't. And now I'm 100%. Oh, they treat me fairly anyway, you know. Doesn't make any difference how who busts me now. But it was busting service. And it worked. I knew that.
If you had to live it over again, would you do it all again?
Yes. Every bit of it. Except I would make some changes. We had that prize fighter aboard, and he was giving me a lot of static. He wanted to go on shore too, and I would. When I was in a non-liberty mood, he raised his hands like he was going to hit me, so I belted him, knocked him against some lockers, and bent the lockers, and then nobody messed with me. So anyway, a couple of years later, I found out in the paper that he fought Joe Lewis. Lasted six rounds with him. I should have told Joe how to get rid of them in a hurry.
That's right.
Anyway, so, but you know, I got to see the funny things.
Oh, I love your stories.
They're not stories.
Well,
they're facts.
I know they're not. When I say story, I don't.
Yeah,
mean
I know.
That.
I know.
Yeah, you're telling the truth. I know that.
To the best of my ability. And my ability is pretty clear on this.
Yes. Would you encourage your family members to join the military?
Well, I got one great grandson now in the Army.
That's right. When you watch movies about the war, how do you feel about it? Are they telling the truth?
The reporter, okay, that's a good question. I'm glad you brought that up. Because, see, we have experts. They got degrees and all that, and they're experts. And they're authorities. They have more authority. But you see, during World War II, they never got the truth. During World War II, everything had to be clear. Even the correspondence stories on a certain action. And when the correspondence would write, it didn't have to go through the censorship. It'd have to agree. And we never wanted our losses to be put out to give aid and comfort to the enemy, see. But we wanted to get the comfort, we wanted to get the losses of the enemy put out, yes. But our own losses were not to be felt, see. And so historians aren't aware from what the correspondents had to submit, really what happened. And there's most always a reason that we go into battle. Not come by night or catch as can't. Submarines, yes. That's an unknown factor, and it's not a battle even, you know, considered. But the truth, it's hard to come by. A lot of times, the full truth. Can you understand that?
Yes, I do understand.
And the correspondent, now, I got books here. So my brother sent me a book. This is an honest God fact. Good book. I opened it. I read who the author was. I read an article. I said, this is a bunch of crap. You know, the guy's smart enough to write a book, but he's not smart enough to know what the hell he's writing about. There's a reason. There's always a reason. For us, there's always been a reason. For most everything. Sometimes you get surprised, but you're on something where you're going to get surprised sometimes, too. But under censorship, I don't know how these experts can be able to be reliable enough to know the facts as to what has transpired. And I don't know how this can be corrected. It's just something that to me is utterly wrong. That's enough.